Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. For this week's episode, I am joined by Carson Barker and Cliff Haley from EcoConnect.com, which is a psychedelic services marketing company. And it's one of these interviews that I consider to be sort of a sign of the times kind of interview where this sort of thing never would have happened even just 5 years ago, but it's something that's happening now. And so I'm happy to document it here on the podcast. And we're going to be getting into all of that in just a little bit. But of course, first, we have a few announcements. First of all, thanks. Thanks to David for making a PayPal contribution in support of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast over this past week. Thank you very much, David. That is very much appreciated. Also, thank you to Hunter and Andrew, both of whom signed up over at my Patreon page, which is at patreon.com/MartinWBall, to become regular contributors. And just thanks to everyone who makes a contribution via PayPal and also all of my ongoing supporters over at Patreon. You guys all make a huge difference for me. I really appreciate it. And this is, of course, a listener-supported podcast, and you are the listeners that are supporting it. So thank you so much. If you would like to make a PayPal contribution or sign up over at Patreon at the level that's comfortable for you and the level of access and bonuses and benefits that you want, everywhere from $1 a month up to $100 a month, you can stop on my personal webpage at martinball.net. There's a PayPal link and also a link to my Patreon page at the top right of the main page. Also, I want to let you know what's coming up soon here on the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. I've got a great interview with Rachel Harris already waiting in the wings, ready to come out here. We talked about her new book, Swimming in the Sacred. Really looking forward to bringing that to you. Also have another interview with Tom Lane that's going to be coming out. It's going to need some editing, so we'll be getting to that, but talking about the Utotono Codex and Aztec mushroom time persons and emanations and all kinds of really interesting stuff. Also coming up, I've got an interview with author Mike Martinacci. We're going to be discussing his book, Psychedelic Cults and Outlaw Churches, which is just being released. And I'm reading through it now and really enjoying it. It's a very interesting history lesson and looking forward to bringing that interview to you guys here on the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. So of course there's more to come. And actually, sort of related to this book by Mike, what inspired this connection was not only his book arrived in the mail, as many books do for authors to be guests on the podcast, but I announced a new book project, which maybe I've mentioned it already here on the podcast, but I'm putting together a new anthology, or at least I should say, I am aspiring to put together a new anthology. We'll see what becomes of all of it. But this new anthology, it's kind of similar to the book that I released last year, Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT, an Anthology of Approaches to Serving the God Molecule. This is going to be an anthology about new psychedelic churches, specifically in the United States. Going to be looking at the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, how it applies to psychedelic sacraments, and I'm looking to create an anthology of different voices of people who have gone through the paperwork and the legal work to actually construct a legal entheogenic church in the United States that serves a psychedelic sacrament. I made an announcement about this on social media, but if you are interested, I have a PDF info packet that I can send to anyone who might be interested in either just learning more about the project or is involved with an entheogenic church or is planning to create an entheogenic church. Just email me at martinwball@gmail.com. And I will send you the PDF for you to peruse and see if that's something that you'd like to get involved in. I've already got a number of interested people and just kind of looking to see where it goes from here. And the target is to actually produce the book and publish it sometime next year. So I'm excited about this and definitely want to talk to you if you're involved in an entheogenic church and would like to be involved. Of course, I am always available for 30, 60, and 90-minute consultations to help you integrate your entheogenic experience from a non-dual and energetic perspective. If you would like to arrange a consultation with me, again, you can use my email, martinwball@gmail.com. Stop by at nondualandtheogenicintegration.com if you want some more details, and I'm happy to set up a call with you. Every week, I do get to talk to people from all around the world, from all different backgrounds, experiences, and help them navigate their integration and help them gain some insight into where they are within their process and what's going on with them. Lastly, just want to mention again that the Sanctum Psychedelic Conference is coming up this month, July 21st through 23rd in Portland, Oregon. This is a pay what you can conference, so there is no set ticket price. You can go to sanctum.org for more information, and that's Sanctum with a P, so PSANCTUM.org for more information. Okay, those are all the announcements. Of course, next week we'll be back with just one of the two remaining chapters from my medical memoir, A Sleep Story. Next week, we're going to cover the year of 2021, which if you've been listening to me for a while, you know that 2021 had its own fuckery of drama that happened. So a main topic of that chapter is what happened with Symposia and how they took a five-year-old video of me and turned it into a weapon of mass outrage and hysteria. And obviously that didn't, things were not going so well for 2019 or 2020, and then that came in 2021. And anyway, we'll get into that next week. Don't need to bitch about it now. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into our conversation with Carson Barker and Cliff Haley. Again, they are with Ikaro Connect. That's all one word, IkaroConnect.com. And this is a psychedelic services marketing company to help you promote your business or even your psychedelic church. So it's one of these sign of the times. And I think it's going to be an interesting conversation for all you out there in listener land. Again, thank you for all of you who support the podcast. Let's go ahead and get into it. I want to welcome on to the Entheogenic Evolution podcast today, Carson Barker, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And Cliff Haley, and you guys are joining from Austin, Texas. Are you both in Austin?
Yes.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about your new business, Ikaro Connect. And this is a psychedelics marketing service. And we're going to be talking all about it today. And this is one of these things that I can't help but comment on, in the sense that I've been doing this podcast for over 15 years now. And having had this podcast as kind of a window onto the psychedelic world, I get to track lots of different changes that are happening in the psychedelic world. And this would certainly fit into that category of psychedelic marketing that 15 years ago, nobody was offering any kind of services like this. And it felt like we were decades away from any kind of legal psychedelic therapy or anything like that. But here we are today with a brand new business that is specifically geared towards marketing of psychedelic services, primarily for therapeutic and medical uses. So, wow. Just, it's one of these changes. And I know it's one that some people bristle and they're like, oh, psychedelics shouldn't be involved in money and they shouldn't be involved in healthcare. And they get like really uptight about it. But I always like to say, well, we do live in a capitalist economy. People do need to make money. And marketing services is just part of that, as far as I'm concerned. So it's one of these interesting changes. And forgive me, but I also just have to comment, and maybe we can start with this by talking about Austin a little bit and maybe what's unique about Austin, because for a lot of people reading the headlines these days, when they think about Texas, what they see is over-the-top trans and homophobia. We see the stripping away of women's healthcare rights. We see the use of migrants as political props, where they're kidnapped and sent to other states for reasons that are honestly beyond me. And so sort of the public perception of Texas is it seems to be regressing backwards in some ways and really moving away from progressive humanitarian values. Yet Austin seems a little bit different. So maybe let's just start there and let's talk about what reality is like in Austin.
Yeah, well, Austin is... Go ahead, Carson.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you kind of hit it spot on about how, the city of Austin and the state of Texas are like night and day. They're almost two different places. You know, I mean, Austin's very liberal. It's very laid back. It's very, you know, we have one of our contracts is with the Austin Civil Rights Department. Civil rights are very much in Forest Town, and it's very, you know, LGBT friendly. It feels like kind of like a major city in California, but you go outside of the Austin city limits and it is a whole different scenario outside of it. And unfortunately, the state government is very conservative and, like you said, regressing a bit. And it's a constant battle between the two. So,
yeah, that's pretty much true. I mean, Austin is, you know, an island in a sea of red, basically, is what people like to say. And there's a few other little pockets out there in small towns where you wouldn't expect it. But they're so far outnumbered by everybody else who is they're regressing, just like you say. It's kind of depressing being on the, you know, the inside of the good part and looking out at the bad part and realizing that that's the perception pretty much everybody has of the entire state. And you can't really blame them. But Austin, thankfully, is sort of not of that mentality by and large.
Yeah. And Austin is the capital of Texas. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Interesting. So when I was out there recently, certainly a number of people talked to me about how there were different and theogenic churches that were there in Austin, and talking about all the ceremonies and the guided psychedelic work that people were doing out there. And it seems like kind of a hotbed for the psychedelic and the theogenic movement right there in Austin. Do you guys feel that that is kind of limited to Austin? Does it reach out from beyond there? Or is it, again, sort of this island of progressive values that's taking place in Austin that's not really happening in the rest of Texas?
I think the ketamine clinics are starting to slowly branch out into other cities in Texas. Mm-hmm. But as far as like, you know, shamanic events and churches and stuff like that, we've only seen that really around Austin and in the kind of surrounding area. But during South by Southwest this year, I mean, psychedelia and psychedelic therapy and entheogen therapy were all the talk. It was just everywhere out here this year. So I think it's definitely a hot spot for it. And that's why we're very thankful to be here in this town, because, you know, we're part of the community and we're all kind of helping each other out. But it's also nice to see, you know, places like Oregon in California and, you know, Denver, who have been way ahead of the curve from us. So even though we're kind of a hot spot, we're still kind of trailing, you know, behind the trailblazers, which are, you know, Oregon and everywhere else.
Those places are kind of who Austin always aspires to be anyway. Yeah. You know, they kind of look toward those places and model a lot of their character from that. Not that Austin doesn't have its own awesome character, of course, but you know, Austin is the little Seattle in Texas, and you know, like I said, it's good to see, but there are tendrils of it kind of spreading out, mostly in the ketamine space, like Carson said. In fact, I drive through Killeen, Texas pretty often, which is where Fort Hood military base is, now called Fort Cavazos. And there's quite a few ketamine clinics popping up there, which surprised me, but it kind of makes sense because it's such a huge military presence. And a lot of the people that need that kind of help, who have, you know, been through a lot of PTSD type stuff, that's a good place for it to kind of start spreading out, I think. But beyond Austin, anything other than ketamine doesn't really seem to be all that present yet.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just curious, how many people live in Austin? Like, what would you say is the percentage of Austin population to Texas? I'm just curious. I mean, you guys might not know this. I mean, I'm kind of asking you guys to speak about Austin, but not that you're necessarily experts on any of this.
Well, it's
growing so fast, it's hard to keep up with the numbers. But I think the last time I looked at it, it was pushing close to 600,000. You know, maybe including all of these other little areas, like we have Georgetown and Cedar Park and Round Rock, and they're really their own individual cities and towns, but it all bleeds into Austin, so it's kind of considered the Austin presence. So it's getting close. It's definitely over 500,000 for sure.
Yeah, and that's. But that being said, I mean, like cities like Dallas and Houston, which also, you know, have big liberal pockets there, are much larger than Austin is. I mean, those are real metroplexes, where Austin kind of started off as a small town that somehow got really popular back in the 80s and 90s, and just mainly through South by Southwest when the tech industry blew up here back in the 2000s, early 2000s. I mean, Twitter launched here, Foursquare launched here. And when that happened, the tech industry just came in this town like crazy and just really blew it up. So, and we're still experiencing that.
Yeah. And you guys obviously are also on the tech end side of things with internet marketing and all of that. And just to speak positively of Austin, not that I feel like we've been bashing it in any way, but in my trip to Austin, that was my first time just the other month. And I found it to be quite spread out. You know, I live in Ashland, Oregon. We have about 20,000 people and we have basically two main streets, and that's all we have here. And it's nice and small, kind of nestled into the valley up against the mountains. But Austin was very spread out, but I just loved how many trees there were and the rivers and everything. It was just very green, very beautiful, very lush while I was there. And actually spring hadn't quite hit here in Ashland. And so it felt really refreshing to be there and see just so many flowers and all the trees blooming and everything. So very nice natural environment. And also getting to go downtown on my way out of town back to the airport and noticing how many people were paddle boarding and kayaking, like there on the river. And the river was all lined with trees, you know, versus like, you think of like Los Angeles, where the LA River is just a cement trench and there's no trees anywhere. No. You know, it just seemed like a very beautiful environment in Austin. So I can definitely see the appeal. And of course, the big music scene that happens in Austin and how important, it was kind of neat just seeing so many places that were celebrating music, which is one of my main loves in life. So definitely some good things about Austin, but yeah, a little concerned about Texas overall.
We're
with you.
If you just Google Texas and news and the headlines, I mean, it's just like, oh my God, have we gone back 50, 60, 100 years? What's going on here? Why are we still having these battles? I thought we were over this stuff, you know? But yeah, like you said, the nature scene in Austin is beautiful. It's great. There's a lot of great outdoor stuff to do. They have, you know, Barton Springs. I don't know if you had a chance to go out there, but Barton Springs is just a gem. It's just a huge natural swimming hole. And it's just, the water's crystal clear. It's 70 degrees year round. It's like the size of like, I think, two or three Olympic pools. And it's just gorgeous. And there's lots of natural, you know, spring fed rivers around here. So I think that's what really drew the kind of the environmentalist kind of hippie culture to Austin back in the 60s. And it's still here. Even though the tech industries came in, I mean, the culture of Austin resides here, which is great.
Yeah, well, I'll have to go back and check out, what do you say, Barton Springs?
Yes, Barton Springs, yeah. It's okay. A great place.
I didn't get a chance to get there, but man, that sounds nice. I love swimming in natural bodies of water. I'm all about it. Yeah, but I didn't get to see an armadillo. I was a little disappointed in that. I didn't see any armadillos.
Did you see anybody riding horses?
Nope, didn't see anybody riding horses, but I did go past. I was out photographing birds, and there was a sign that said no trespassing, but I could hear an interesting bird a little bit down the road, and so I did cross the no trespassing sign, and I did think, you know, well, I am in Texas, like, do I really want to go? Yeah.
That's always a possibility, I suppose. All that being said, I mean, being embedded in the tech and the kind of nature scene and the hippie scene here in Austin kind of just led naturally to us going into Yocardo Connects and just starting that up. So that's been a great experience and a really rewarding experience as well, too, because, I mean, we've been doing marketing and advertising for a long time, and it's great. We've been, you know, really good at it, not to pat myself on the shoulder too hard or pat, you know, Cliff on the shoulder too much, but once we started getting to, you know, Icaro and entheogen and psychedelics therapy, I mean, that's just amazing. I mean, it's, you know, statistically proven to help people and heal people. And that's what really made us the most interested in it in the first place.
Yeah. So when did you guys first team up and start working together?
Ooh, that was a long time ago. We met at a company called Frames Direct, which sold, I think it was the first company to sell eyeglasses online, right?
Yeah, the first online prescription eyewear company, and they also sold sunglasses, all the top brands, and that's where Carson and I met in, what, 2010-ish?
I think it was about 2008-ish, yeah. Yeah,
it might have been. It was early.
We both worked in the marketing department for this company, and Cliff was doing SEO, and I was doing, I think, content creation, and we just hit off really well, and we're both musicians, you know, same as you, so that always, you know, helps connect people. And we started pitching these really big marketing ideas to the owners of the company, and they were, you know, kind of old school guys, and they were gets, and they were, you know, we were running big social media campaigns, and they couldn't see it, and they were wanting to instead run ads in the Yellow Pages, and which they tried and didn't do very well. And so Cliff and I started talking, and we were like, you know, we should just start our own company and start pitching these ideas to people that are actually going to see the value in them and take them. Mm-hmm. And then that just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, so that's even another big change that also in the time frame that I've been doing this podcast, that social media was still kind of new. But yeah, social media and sort of a whole new advertising landscape. Like even I was just watching this video earlier today talking about the writer's strike in Hollywood, and they're talking about how the move to streaming and social media has really impacted writers' ability even to make a living, because they're expected to do more in a shorter period of time and they're actually paid less. And so it was all very interesting, and you know, that we're still living in this age of this transition from old legacy media to the new media, and then how do we navigate it and utilize it? And it's interesting that you guys started out with, I guess, sounds like people who are kind of into the old legacy media and didn't want to look at how things are changing and shifting with so much of the world moving online, and the online presence being the primary source of where people are getting their information. So with that in mind, like, so what is marketing in social media age? Like, what are the things that people need to be thinking about? And I do want to get into all the different facets of what you guys are offering at Ikoro Connect and talk more about the inspiration behind that. But maybe we could just talk a little bit about marketing in general. And one of the reasons I ask is I am like total shit at marketing. Like I don't ever market anything that I do. I post it to my Facebook page and, you know, hope somebody finds it. But I'm really naive about marketing, and people tell me, oh, you got to get a TikTok and you got to do all this. And I'm like,
Well, if you're not doing any marketing, you're doing a phenomenal job on your own. So I think you're just fine. Yeah. So, but I mean, yeah, because we visit your site and listen to your podcast, and you're doing amazing work. And it sounds like you have a good steady audience too. So some people just get lucky in a sense like yours, where they, you know, they launch a business, they launch, you know, a creative aspect, and it does really well. But as far as like what marketing is, I mean, there's a, you know, a whole slew of different avenues for marketing. There's social media, there's influencer marketing, there's stuff like TikTok, there's a million different social media channels out there. There's app marketing, there's SEO, and there's the services we offer. And I mean, this kind of list goes on and on. And the key is to kind of find which ones are a niche specific to whatever you're trying to market, whether it's a business or a clinic or you know, a podcast. You don't have to be on every single platform and spending money on every single one to make yourself successful. You should narrow down to what is going to work best for your goals and pursue those.
Right. Because each social media platform kind of speaks to a slightly different demographic, you know. So if your primary target audience is maybe skewed older, then you might want to go to Facebook. That same crowd, but with a slightly younger chunk, is also on Instagram because they're connected. And then, you know, Twitter's pretty much got everybody, but it does really well with cause related issues and services. You know, so the point is anytime we bring a client on, we need to find out exactly who they are, what their culture is, what their, you know, primary motivation is, what their personality is. And then from there, we can determine where to actually spend money when it comes to social media marketing. Because like Carson said, you don't just want to dump it everywhere, because there's going to be some channels that just aren't going to resonate with anyone because the people you need to contact just aren't there.
Yeah. So let's talk about the genesis of the idea of Ikoro Connect, that it seems like it's the right time for something like this. This seems like a very logical development. Like, as you know, here in Oregon, psilocybin-assisted therapy services are coming online. People are just completing their initial round of training programs, and there's going to be centers opening up, and so this is going to be happening. So we're at the point where these businesses are above board. You know, it's a totally different world for underground practitioners. You know, they're never going to be advertising on social media or that kind of thing. But for the above board, it's happening, and change is probably coming really quickly. So when did you guys kind of germinate this idea that this is what you wanted to create and the market that you wanted to apply your talents to?
I think it was me that pitched the idea to Cliff at first. It was a few years ago, like pre-pandemic. I started just naturally kind of organically running into like meeting shamans and people that run ayahuasca retreats and kind of talking about what they do and just realizing how much they help people. And then kind of like seeing how the legalities of it are slowly starting to become more accessible and they're getting more laws pushed through. Whereas, like you said, they used to be all underground. It's not really so much anymore. And we kind of saw that's on the horizon that pretty soon this is going to be completely legal. And we want to be on the crest of it when that happens. And Cliff mainly had already been working in the cannabis industry, like doing marketing consulting for them for, you know, a decade and seeing companies grow from, you know, somebody selling stuff out of their apartment to multi-million dollar businesses. So it kind of, he already had a lot of experience in that field. And then I was in Mexico and I just randomly happened to meet some of the people from microdose.buzz and became good friends with them. And then we started going to conventions and learning more about it. And then, we decided this is the next thing and we need to do this. And especially after going and hearing some of the stories of people that have been doing ketamine therapy and psilocybin therapy to treat, you know, PTSD and heroin addiction and things like that. I mean, hearing their stories, I'd like nothing else mm-hmm. worked. And they tried, some people talked sort of that they tried for like 20 years to quit and they were on the verge of suicide. And then they started entheogenic psychedelic therapy and it changed their whole lives. And that was really, really inspiring to us. And we were like, we want to be a part of this. This is something really important.
And I mean, personally, it was not a hard sell for me when Carson brought it up because I wouldn't consider myself a psychonaut, but I have some experience with psychedelics. And, you know, I've been a cannabis user off and on for all my adult life. But, you know, my dad's 15 years sober, and he would not have been even here, you know, 15 years ago. And it was a tough road to get there. And something like ketamine would have helped him. So I'm like, if we can use our powers for good, then let's do it.
Yeah. So maybe let's back up a moment and talk a little bit. It's almost feeling a bit like ancient history now when we talk about like cannabis and cannabis marketing, because I mean that that tide has changed. I mean,
oh yeah,
wow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I started as like a cannabis activist when I was like 15 years old. I had my first experience with cannabis, and then I started like posting stuff without permission around my high school about you know, all the uses of hemp and the medical cannabis and stuff like that. And I didn't think we would ever be where we are now at that point. But that was, I mean, I'm 50 years old now. I was 15. That was a long time ago. So things have really changed. But maybe let's talk a little bit about that, of getting into the whole cannabis business and cannabis market and marketing there. Like, what was that like kind of jumping into that area?
It's a lot like what I see now. It was initially kind of a tough inroad because even though things were being, you know, legalized either medically or even recreationally, it was kind of a slow move for various platforms that you would want to advertise on to get on board with that. So, you know, let's say you're targeting a set of keywords. Some of the keywords, even though they might have a completely legitimate use, like medical cannabis, would just get blocked and you couldn't advertise them simply because it mentioned cannabis. Now that's starting to loosen up. But, you know, we're seeing these same challenges now with psychedelics because it's still so new. And, you know, luckily we've kind of looked at it hard enough and worked up some strategies to get around it that we know how to, you know, really get brands out there without bumping up against these roadblocks. And, you know, that's going to open up even more over the next few years. But, yeah, I don't, you know, we put a lot of effort into really finding out how to get past the sort of established taboos within the systems at a lot of these places. And it can be done. You know, even with Google, we've managed to get an exemption so that we can actually do some things that, you know, maybe some other company can't. But even that's going to loosen up pretty soon. So, you know, now's the time, basically.
So that's really interesting. Did you have to like apply for some kind of exemption? Did you have to talk to Google and say, hey, this is what we're doing? Can you allow this content?
Right.
It was a multi-step huge process. And it wasn't like you just like, hey, can we do this? Like, sure. It was like we had to talk to Google. We have an ongoing relationship with Google. We have for a long time. When they first launched their Android phones, they contacted us to do when they were first started doing like app marketing for Androids. They contacted us personally to run some campaigns on there, so we've established a connection with them back in the day. And so when we came this against this roadblock, we started reaching out to some of our contacts there and asking them to help us out. And it was not an overnight process. It took a long time. And like anything else in this industry, I mean, especially in the psychedelics industry, the game is changing every day. So part of our job is to stay, keep our thumb on the pulse and see what's going to happen next and kind of try to be as preemptive as we possibly can.
Right. So like in the brains of these organizations, whether it's people brains or, you know, AI brains or whatever, the subject of psychedelics and not so much cannabis anymore, but still a little bit, is that these things are illegal. You can't advertise them. And so, you know, we just have to work with certain people to make sure they understand that this is specifically only for clinics and for therapeutic use. You know, we're not sending people to the dark web or anything like that. You know, so luckily we've got contacts that help us make those inroads.
Yeah. So you really have to specify then that this is for the medical therapeutic use.
Yeah, we got to be, you know, very clear in the ad copy and the images and stuff. That doesn't mean that we have to abandon creativity, of course. It's more that we have to send this to somebody for review and they say, okay, we can tell you're not, you know, trying to sell something out of the back of your van.
Yeah, and also it's important that, I mean, you know, these legalities are city by city, state by state, county by county. So, you know, what might be illegal here is not illegal somewhere else in the country. So when we geo target our ads, we have to make sure that, you know, they exist in the confines of the legalities of that certain area.
Yeah, you know, that actually just reminds me of here in Oregon where, you know, all of Oregon got to vote on the psilocybin-assisted therapy initiative and it passed. But then there was kind of blowback from some of the rural communities. And so then we had to vote on it again, not on the bill itself, but whether on it like a county by county basis or even city by city basis, if the city was going to allow psilocybin assisted services within their territory. And so a number of areas within Oregon have now opted out. Now the major metropolitan areas have all opted in. But that means, like, you can go to Portland, or you can go to Ashland, or you can go to Eugene once these centers are open and actually accepting patients. But if you go outside the city limits, suddenly it's illegal again. And even the absurdity was one of the things that was being promoted out in rural areas was they were saying that mushroom cultivation is going to use all of our water. That we're not gonna have enough water for agricultural use because they're gonna be using to grow all these crops of mushrooms, which of course is like just
absurd.
It's hilariously absurd. But it also shows the continuing level of ignorance among certain portions of the population that just don't don't understand.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of our efforts and of everybody involved in this community's efforts is education, right? I mean, you included. I mean, it's the best way to change people like that is to educate them, not kind of shut them out. Yeah. So, and a lot of them don't want to be educated, but I mean, you have to at least give them the opportunity to educate themselves.
Right. A lot of these people would probably benefit from the use and, you know, the therapeutic use and medical use of this stuff if they just knew about it. Yeah. You know, again, kind of like the brains in certain platforms, they still just have this antiquated, it's just bad, it's illegal, it cannot be work for me at all. But, you know, if we just educate these people on the benefits, the proven benefits, by the way, not just guesswork, then I think that would go a long way.
Yeah, I mean, it is ironic that here in Oregon that apparently, statistically speaking, we're pretty low on mental health care overall in terms of the 50 states, that Oregon does not rank very high in terms of our services available to people who are having mental health issues. And even with the drug decriminalization bill that was passed a couple of years ago, the whole idea was that we're going to shift funds from policing and enforcement into drug treatment and healthcare programs. But that transition hasn't really happened and people aren't really making use of it. So we've got it on paper, but in terms of the practical application of people actually getting mental health care, it's not coming through. It's not happening.
Yeah, and I think that's U.S.-wide. I mean, I think every state's – I mean, I'm sure some states rank better than others for mental health care, but, I mean, health care in this country is not cheap. It's hard to access, and which kind of brings me, you know, to the point of – I mean, even though that we're, you know, doing the psychedelics marketing company and, you know, we're going to conventions and it's getting legalized in some places, it's still very much in its infancy, you know? I mean, ideally, I mean, anybody could have access to ketamine therapy or psilocybin therapy or something like that. But for right now, it's only for the wealthy. I mean, you know, ketamine clinics are around 3K or more per session.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, who can afford that? I mean, and most insurance companies don't cover it. There's some workarounds where you can, I mean, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, depending on what insurance plan you have, can help you out with it. But it's not widely accepted. So, that's hopefully the next step, is to make it more affordable, more accessible to everybody. And I think that that's probably what you said about early when we first started this conversation about how money doesn't belong, and, you know, the psychedelics industry and marketing doesn't belong in it, and in the health industry. And I think it's very much needed in the health industry. Absolutely it is. But the health industry needs to change, you know?
Yeah.
So to make that connection happen.
It seems to be happening pretty fast, though, at a good clip, because it seems like when we first started going to psychedelic conventions a couple of years ago, it's like the ones that we've gone to more recently, it seems like that sentiment is getting a lot more positive and optimistic, which, you know, of course it's eventually going to be not a problem at all, but it seems like it's moving in that direction faster than I had at first thought it might. Still a ways to go, of course.
Yeah, so we'll return to the focus on medical applications and medical clinics and advertising there. But I'm just curious about, obviously now there are a lot of people who are running retreats, generally outside of the United States, right? In places where there aren't legal prohibitions in the way of serving these different medicines. And, you know, like some people I've had on the podcast, they're running retreats and they do their advertising and social media campaigns, say, hey, come to Mexico or come to Costa Rica. And they're doing all that. Is that an area that you guys would be looking to work with? Or do you just really want to stay on the medical side of things just to keep it clean?
What's your view? We work with those kind of industries as well, too, with people doing retreats. And those were some of our first clients. Mm-hmm. And we work with ones that do retreats inside the U.S., and they do it legally. They either register themselves as a church so they can administer that, you know, that medication. To us, or at least to me, that's still the medical industry. I mean, it's medicine. Yeah. You're helping somebody.
Yeah, I think we have more of a holistic meaning of medicine whenever we talk about it now than we did a few years ago. So when we say something's medicine, you know, we're referring to that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great, because that's obviously something that is just blowing up right now. Like you mentioned, the entheogenic churches, that this is also something that just a couple of years ago, it was like, well, maybe there's one or two, you know, that have gone through this process to have their legal rights recognized. But now it's like across the map. And I'm just astounded when I'm talking to people and they're in the Midwest and they're like, yeah, we opened up our entheogenic church, or, you know, just places that I never expected to see something like that. You know, it's one thing if we're talking about the West Coast, you know, we kind of expect that. But, you know, and all these other areas. And it's something that is just, it's exploding. I mean, I don't think we even have the numbers of how many legally registered entheogenic churches there are now. And that's also something of a workaround around these financial issues of, you know, being able to get access to a psychedelic experience in a safe and supportive environment, but doesn't have all of the upfront costs of, say, going to a clinic that has healthcare and liability and has overhead and all of that. So it's just such a new area of American culture that I think it's very exciting.
Yeah, we think it's really exciting too. I mean, it's kind of like the Wild West, you know. It's just like people are trying stuff out and seeing what works and what doesn't, and people are just trying to push to get, you know, their foot through the door and get their business or their community established. And you know, a couple of years from now, I'll probably, you know, kind of have a more solidified kind of way it works. But it's very exciting to see that people have the potential to actually do things like this, you know, and they're not underground anymore. I mean, one of the first conventions that we went to, I think maybe it was the Cannadella convention in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And the speakers there were like, can you believe we're doing this? We're not worried about getting arrested. And that's great. We're talking about mushrooms openly and, you know, psilocybin openly and ketamine openly. And it's okay. And it was just kind of just looking around and seeing all these people and thinking that it was like, man, we made a huge step in the growth of humanity, you know, and it's mm-hmm. it's happening here and it's exciting to be a part of it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so Ikaro Connect then. Let's talk specifically about the business. Let's just start with the name. How'd you guys decide on a name?
Well, we were pitching ideas around a lot and we were wanted something that kind of really embodies the purpose of the company. And do you know what Ikaro is? I'm not sure if you heard that term before.
Yeah, those are the traditional songs that are sung in Amazonian ayahuasca rituals.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So, I mean, so we kind of thought that, you know, those songs, you know, amplify the experience for those ayahuasca ceremonies. And that's what our company does for our clients is we amplify their business and their message to get out to their clients and to reach their customers. So basically when someone, you know, if they have a clinic or a church or they're just a therapist or whatever they do, our job is to kind of amplify their message and get it out so they can, you know, grow their business and grow their community.
Nice. And I like that as sort of a metaphor that, you know, that idea of the songs that are used, you know, like, okay, so just backing up when I was in Austin, I was speaking at the Entheogenesis event and I was invited to speak on the topic of music and entheogenic experience. And one of the things that I started with is I said, you know, someone very famous in the psychedelic world once said that you should take a high dose of mushrooms alone in the dark and silence. And I said, that is something that no indigenous culture has ever said anywhere because music.
True. That's right.
Music is the through line. Music is the communication that is so fundamental to entheogenic experience that it's almost baffling that anyone would promote the idea of do it all in silence. That because it's the song that carries the energy and it carries that message and it translates from one medium to another and it crosses boundaries. And so I just love that as a metaphor for companies to be able to get their message out and to communicate what it is that they're sharing and bringing that out into the world. So I applaud the name. I really liked it when I said, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. That's also why we wanted it to be Connect and not Ikaro Digital or Ikaro Marketing, you know, because that's ultimately what we want to do is use our powers for good and help connect these communities and these businesses to the people who need them, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, as one of the creative types on my end, like I said, that I just don't do any marketing. That I know that a lot of people who kind of work in these areas that they're very passionate about the work that they do and the services that they provide. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to quote unquote getting the message out, it's very intimidating, especially with so many different social media platforms and the idea of like, oh, fuck, do I got to make videos for all these things? And how do I got to organize marketing campaigns and design different kinds of websites that, you know, not everybody is connected into that technological side of things. And it can be very intimidating. And so to have a business like yourself that can step in and say, hey, we got you, we can take care of that and then really work with the person or work with the business to craft something that works for everyone. I could definitely see the value of that.
Yeah, well, thank you. We appreciate that. And we obviously see the value of it too, because I mean, people like you or people that, you know, have their own ketamine clinic or run their own entheogen church. I mean, their job is to help people and not to like spend half their day on social media channels and, you know, making sure they're doing the right hashtags and, you know, all that stuff. That's a lot of work. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to waste a lot of time and a lot of money. So that's where we kind of want to just fill in that gap so they can continue doing the work that they're doing and get more work. And we can kind of take that off their workload.
Yeah. And I think it's important that you guys are also sympathetic to the cause. You're sympathetic to the mission. That
absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd do it if we weren't, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, this is... Yeah, like I said before, when we first started talking to people and hearing the stories, and I feel like I always kind of knew that psychedelics and entheogens had the healing powers they do, just from the indigenous cultures that have, proven that. But I've never seen it like face to face until we started talking to people and hearing their stories, and that was really moved us to push this forward.
Yeah, I think that personal element is so important. I mean, I'm sharing more from my own story, but it just reminds me of how several years ago I was interviewed by this guy who runs some kind of radio program in Canada, and he had me on, and I was talking to him about the medical benefits of psychedelics, and particularly we were talking about like PTSD, depression, anxiety, suicidal tendencies, and we're talking about its use among veterans and people perhaps who have been first responders and things like that. And eventually this guy tells me, he said, "Well, I used to be a cop and I think all these people just need to suck it up."
Oh my God.
Yeah, and then he cut off my mic. And then
Are you
that was
serious?
yeah,
Wow.
that was the end of the show.
Amazing.
And
Well,
that's a hard guy to reach, I think.
I think he needs some ketamine therapy.
You
He needs something.
But I think it's the personal stories, I think, that potentially can get through to people like that. Because how can you talk to someone who's saying, "Yeah, like this ayahuasca trip saved my life," and then to turn around and say, "Yeah, fucking just suck it up, wimp." That it's that human element. And I think that it's such a big part of what's been happening in culture these days is we are continually dehumanizing each other, and we're turning each other into types and stereotypes, and then projecting all this garbage onto people versus let's actually look at the human being. And I think that that human element of people who were suffering and have been transformed, that's a message that's worth amplifying, and that it serves humanity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it spot on. We're telling the personal story and the personal transformation is what's really going to resonate with people, because especially living online and a lot of people work remotely now, and you get really kind of disconnected with the human being, and you just see a screen, you don't see a human being, and you don't really have an actual connection with them, and that kind of dehumanizes us all across the board. So if you see something you don't like, then you just automatically shut it off. You don't give it the chance to respond or interact with you. And that's whenever we do, when we're making our videos, or we make our websites, we do our messaging, I mean, we have to have kind of a human connection in there to try to just kind of, push that through and make it happen. But yeah, we've, being from Texas, Cliff and I both have, our families are from Texas. A lot of them are from the rural area. And a lot of them are kind of old school, probably like that guy that you talk to that cuts your microphone off. And they're always, initially very standoffish about subjects like this. But the last couple of years, I've talked to them about it, and they ask what I'm doing for a living now, and I tell them about they could all, connect. And at first, they kind of scoffed and laughed at it. But then I kind of tell them, a lot of my relatives are war veterans, and I tell them that how it's helped, war veterans with PTSD, like nothing else has. And all of a sudden, their eyes change and their face changes a little bit. And then they start to think about it a little deeper, and it's not just a hippie drug from the 60s. It's not all Timothy Leary, it's taken on a different path now.
Yeah, I notice personally whenever we are at these conferences, especially early on, and I would be Instagramming or tweeting, images of the panels and stuff, and especially those that included the title in it, that I would start getting likes and shares and thumbs up from, some of these old school people in my family. I never thought in a million years would have responded to something like that. And I think only because they saw that it was clearly a legitimate setting, it was a scientific setting. They could see what was being discussed and what it was about. And I think a lot of these, it's a small thing, but I think for people seeing that coming from, somebody me who's like on the inside of the family, I think that helps them a lot, whether they, fully grasp it or not.
It even kind of reminds me of the gay rights movement, of that idea of people coming out to their families that we can judge homosexuals because they're not around here and we don't know them. But that idea of, well, look, actually, we have members of the family who might be homosexual, or we have members of the family who are using psychedelics for therapeutic purposes. That, again, it humanizes it and it allows us to make connections rather than just viewing each other as the other that is scary and dangerous and different. That we're all part of the same family. Yeah,
absolutely agree.
So I've got your website up here, and maybe we can talk a little bit about it. It's got a nice little landing page here. It says, our services, we offer expert digital marketing services. And so we've got psychedelic website design, psychedelic marketing services, social engagement marketing, award-winning videos. So maybe we could talk about all these different elements and how I would kind of assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, if somebody's going to come in, maybe they would just use one of these services, or would they like to use all of these services? I kind of imagine that they kind of all go together in various ways. But let's talk about these different elements and how they can be used separately or how they might be used together.
Yeah, sure. So, like you said, I mean, these services they're all kind of connected. That doesn't mean everybody's going to use every single service. You know, they're tailor made for each client. So all of our contracts we do are custom per person, because every person's got unique needs. They've got individual goals. Some people might want to reach other people in their own immediate like geo targeted community. Some people might want to reach people worldwide or just all over the U.S. So when we meet with the clients, we kind of discuss what their goals and needs are, and we kind of just make a plan that works specifically for them.
I think the only piece that is completely separate would be the website design, because some companies just don't need a website. But everything else, if needed, we can touch on everything, or we can build up something completely a la carte based specifically on the client need.
Yeah, so let's walk through like an example. Let's say a ketamine clinic comes in and says, hey, we're opening up our clinic. We want to get engaged with some marketing. What are the steps? How do people go through that?
The first thing that we usually say is we will build your proposal based on either your goals or your budget. So if your goal is that you want to get this many people on your door, this many times a month, then we'll build you a proposal around that. Or if you say, my budget is this amount per month, can you just give me the best option for that and cram anything in there? We can do that. But we'll kind of start off with the basics. Like if they don't have a website, we'll build them a website. We always suggest videos for everybody, because people would much rather watch a video than they would, read something on the screen or anything else. People just love to, that's how they engage with companies. It's either watching videos or listening to podcasts, things like that. So let's build them out a whole plan, and we'd structure out, if we're going to do social media campaigns for them, we'd build them out what that's going to look like, what's it going to say, what are the images going to look like. And we'll strategize the plan for, usually we start at least 6 months and move on from there. That was kind of a broad overview. Yeah. If you want to get more detail than that, we definitely can.
Yeah. So I think website design, that's pretty obvious in terms of what we're talking about. But let's talk a little bit more about the marketing services, the social engagement marketing, and then actually the construction of videos, those three different elements there.
Okay. Well, I can tell you one thing that we discovered when we first started this company up is that, marketing for psychedelics and entheogen businesses is a whole different ballpark than it is for any other kind of industry. Because the stuff we already talked about, how you can get shut down in certain areas or just who your target audience is. So we kind of figured out that there's, we had to create new kind of services, new practices that haven't been done yet. One of them is HSO, which is holistic search optimization. And Cliff can touch a little bit more on that. That's kind of his specialty. But basically, there's search optimization is like how you rank on Google, right? So if someone looks up ketamine clinic in my area, like where are you going to pop up? That's how your search optimization is. If you don't have very good search optimization, no one's going to find you. Same thing in the app store. If you get an app where you want to do some advertising on the phones, if you don't have good search optimization, then no one's going to. If people type in key terms related to your business, no one's going to find you. So we kind of developed a specialized search optimization platform that works with psychedelics and entheogen clinics. And it's called Holistic Search Optimization. And it incorporates all the things we just talked about, SEO, SEM, and ASO, and really specifies them towards that client's niche.
Right. And it's not just ensuring that you appear in search. It's ensuring that people see what you want them to see. So we don't just, you know, optimize purely for the fact that we want you to appear there, but we want to make sure that we're getting a message across, you know, in Google and Bing, Yahoo, and whatever people use. And it's especially important for something like a clinic that serves a specific area, because it's, you know, important to geo-target that. And when somebody's searching for a ketamine clinic near me, well, you want to definitely pop up if you're near them.
Yeah.
And you want your message to stand out against everybody else.
Yeah. So then, how about the social engagement marketing, the social media campaigns? And yeah, what are the ins and outs of doing that, of creating a social media campaign, and like what's being produced? How's it being used? How are we finding the right target audience? I mean, we talked a little bit about that before in terms of like age and things like that. But what can you say about that?
Well, so we have an extensive kind of list of research tools we use to find out, you know, whoever the client's target audience is. We found out, you know, where they're located at, what their age group is, what their interests are, if they're already interested in the psychedelics community or if they need to be introduced to it, what kind of ads they're clicking on, if they're going to events that are psychedelic or entheogen related. We can find all that stuff out and just drill it down to the very T to find out their target audience. And then we do the social engagement campaigns. We can engage them on either social channels or on Google or on LinkedIn, and kind of advertise them to direct them wherever you want to direct them. So most social engagement campaigns, we try to direct people back to the client's website instead of building their fan base, because ideally, you know, that's the whole idea is like, if you have a ketamine clinic, you want people to come to your site and, you know, buy your services. So we can use all these different social channels and social media tools to kind of find the target audience and drive them back to the business site to ultimately, you know, make a sale.
And how about the role of influencers? And obviously they have a lot of power on social media these days. We just, speaking of trans issues, we just saw this very interesting, interesting is the right word, case with Bud Light and working with a trans media influencer. So it seems like kind of a tricky area in terms of who you're getting as a social media influencer. But is that something that you guys are involved in and part of these social media campaigns? And how do you find the right person and find the right target audience? I mean, I know a lot of it is this data driven, and that's something that is like a black box to me. Like, you know, what all that stuff is.
Well, yeah, we've been doing influencer marketing for a long time, and it's been really effective. And it's, you know, once it kind of came on board, you know, years ago, we realized what a powerful marketing tool this could be, and it's definitely proven itself worthy. So, finding the right influencer and all that stuff, it's a lot of work. I mean, we have a huge list of influencers we go through. A lot of them we've connected with already. If we haven't, then we reach out to them. And we do a lot of back-end research to make sure that not only do they have a huge audience, but that audience actually engages with them and likes and comments and you know, kind of follows them and does more than just, you know, visit the site or just, you know, have a big following. We do some research on that back end and make sure we get the right influencer. They may work out a plan with that influencer. It's going to be a one-off. It's going to be for, you know, once a week. And then how effective that's going to be. And at the end of the campaign, we kind of measure the results and how effective it was.
Right. We don't just look for somebody who's, you know, famous and got a lot of followers, and so we can just reach a mass number of people. You know, we look for influencers that are in some way directly connected to the community or the service being provided, because otherwise it's just phony. You know, you don't want some, I don't know, athlete or somebody selling something that has nothing to do with sports, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of a lame example, but you know, the point is that's kind of what makes social engagement marketing is the engagement part and getting someone that's legitimately sort of involved in what you're trying to push is important, I think.
Yeah.
So with some of these elements that you're producing then, just in terms of the practicality of how it works, Do you provide the content to the business, and then are they the ones posting, or do you also set up like social media accounts with them, and then are you guys in charge of posting, or you know, how does that work?
I mean,
if they don't have them, we set them up, and if they do have them, then we get admin access so that we can handle it all for them. But they are in the loop the entire time. They have approval of everything that goes out. You know, we're not just running wild with it. Because again, we want to make sure it's on point and it's really speaking to the people that they want to connect with.
Yeah. So it sounds like, so if we have a business and they say, look, we're just social media shy, we don't have any accounts, and we don't want to invest our time in that, you guys could do that for them, of course, with their approval, running everything by them, as you say. But that can be part of the service as well. It's like, okay, we're going to run these accounts for you, we're going to put out this content for you, and we'll make sure the feedback is all coming to you so that you know you see what's going on. But that it can actually be part of the services then.
Yeah. It's a step-by-step and case-by-case process. If somebody comes to us just like what you said, they don't have a social media channel, then we'll set it up for them. We'll design it all out, and we'll say, this is the game plan. This is what we're going to post. This is when we're going to post it. We'll send you results and data every month or every week. And or if they say, we've already got a social media channel up, and we've got a lot of followers, but it's not really producing anything, we want to turn it into, you know, something that's going to bring us, you know, broaden our community and bring us more business, then we'll kind of just take over from there, or just like Cliff said, they'll add us on as admin, and we'll kind of just enhance it.
Yeah. So then are you looking at the analytics all the way through to seeing, okay, this video got so many click-throughs, this one got so many likes, let's make more like this one didn't do so well, so let's tweak that or get rid of that. Is this kind of a constant back and forth with all of this material?
Oh yeah, the data drives it for sure.
Yeah, that's the optimization process. We have to optimize the stuff on a daily, weekly, monthly basis to see what's working, what's not working. And as far as the data we can get, I mean, Cliff can more testify on this, but it's just absolutely insane with how much data that we can acquire when you run some of these ads. I mean, we can figure out what time people clicked on it, what kind of device they were on, all their demographics, what they went to next. Do they go to another page? Do they come back? Or do they go to another channel? Do they come back? I mean, do they wear pink ties on Tuesdays? I mean, it's just ridiculous how granular it can get.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Cliff?
Well, I'll add that, we do a lot of A/B testing. So the data is not just, we're not just running a single ad and get on that and saying, well, that's not working, let's do this, or this is working great, let's leave it alone. You know, we're running multiple ads at the same time against each other. And based on how each one performs, we can start weeding out the ones that don't work. And eventually we're narrowing down to the best message that's effective for us.
So in terms of these kinds of content, are there any generalities you can share about what seems to work best and what doesn't work? Like I said, I'm not on a lot of social media. I'm on Facebook and I have an Instagram account. I actually don't scroll through stuff all that often, but something I see a lot of these days is people posting videos that have, the text of what they're saying running through it. Is that something that's generally effective, or are slideshows better? Does the target audience change what works better? I'm just kind of curious about some of these dynamics and what. Are there any generalities about what works versus what doesn't work?
I would say, when Cliff can pitch on this too, there's not really much generalities because every audience is different. And so it's really based on your target audience. If you're going to have the ones that have the scrolling text, or if you're going to have some of the ones, the high-end ones like we do, that have the rotoscoping in there, those really resonate good with the psychedelics industry. But all of them, they'll have their own purpose and their own niche and produce at some level.
Right. Ultimately, it comes down to something that's engaging on whatever platform it is. You know, there's a difference between running a banner that simply says get 50% off, click here, versus something that really engages and clicks with people. But again, it comes down to the specific need of the service. Are you selling a single product, or are you offering a service that deals with people and you need to build up a rapport? And then, if we get again into demographics and stuff, a younger demographic responds better to TikTok style videos, whereas an older demographic does like more traditional meme type banners. Again, this is part of the A/B testing and drilling down into what's really working and sticking with it once we get there.
Yeah. And then in terms of videos, like you've already mentioned that people do like to watch videos, that that could be easier for people to absorb information. So if you land on a website and, oh, click on the video, are there parameters there that seem to work best for psychedelic marketing in terms of, like, do we want to see lots of psychedelic visuals or maybe not so many psychedelic visuals? You know, that's a big part of the question that people have in the psychedelic world. Mm-hmm. Like, do I make it overtly psychedelic or do I try and make it tamer to not scare off people? Or, you know, what are some of the dynamics there?
That's definitely kind of a bit of the target audience too, because if you're trying to reach a more old school target audience, you may go something for a little bit tamer. But if you want to reach people that are a little more new age and they're kind of already in the scene, you'll go something for a little bit more psychedelic looking. But you, our preference at the moment, which changes a lot, is like you want to have some kind of cool visuals in there to engage people, but you don't want it to make it look like a Grateful Dead show. You know, I mean, because that's not really unless you're advertising a Grateful Dead show, but that's not really what you're trying to do, right? So it's got to speak to the audience, but it's also got to have, you know, just a bit of grounding there as far as how far you can go out with it.
It is a balance, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then in terms of like the content that you're using, I mean, do you guys work with artists? Do you work with videographers? Are you creating all your own materials to use in these marketing campaigns? Or, you know, in other words, is it just you guys or is it kind of a network of people that you're working with? And yeah.
Yeah, we have a team about 20 people on board. So and our video and design team is the best of the best. I mean, I don't know if you know who Richard Linklater is, but our team has done a lot of his work for his films. And our design team wins awards all the time. Our PR team wins awards. So we basically took the best parts of our companies from AppSpire and Redwood Creative and combined them on board. But the video, especially the video work we've done, there's no way we could do that on our own. We need professionals to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it sounds like even though this particular business itself is new, you guys have got a seasoned team that knows what they're doing. This is just a new application of what you've been doing all along, but it's branching out into this new area.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you had sent me an email a couple of weeks ago saying that you were just about to go live. So you're live now, so that the business is up. And what kind of response have you received so far? And what are you doing? And this is obviously part of it, but what are you doing for your own marketing of your marketing services?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the response has been great. I mean, the site's been up for a while, for a few years, but we needed to kind of revamp and have a new look to it. And we really wanted to push it. So the revamp site looks really, really good. And that was Cliff and his team that did that. They did a phenomenal job. But the response has been huge. People love the site. We're getting lots of contacts every day. We're having, you know, daily sales calls, and we're lining up people to talk with. We're going to that MAPS event in Denver in about a week or two. Mm-hmm. So we're making, you know, plans for meetings then. So, you know, the community so far has been really engaging and open to us, which has been great. Because I think they see that, you know, our services are worthwhile, and a lot of them need our help. So that's what we're here to do.
Yeah. And any blowback, any people coming forward saying, wow, psychedelics and marketing, you can't do that.
I haven't experienced that yet. Have you, Cliff?
No, yeah. I haven't really.
Yeah. It's been all positive so far. Knock on wood.
I think it's because we're coming at it honestly. You know, like I said, we want to use our powers for good. We're not just some big corporate monster that's like, here's where we can make more money and stuff. You know, I mean, we see the benefit in this. We have personal ties to it in some aspects. So I think the authenticity kind of helps that, because we really do, you know, want to see this stuff take off for the benefit of everybody.
Yeah, that's great. So you guys are going to be going to the Psychedelic Science Conference, the MAPS Conference. And it sounds like you guys like to hit a lot of these and try and make connections at these kinds of events. And
yeah, when we go to these events, our main objective is just to learn, just to listen and mm-hmm. learn and to talk to people, see what people need and what's going on, what things are changing, what people's issues are, what's working, what's not. And that's the main goal, is just to talk to people and learn more about the industry so we can kind of keep our tabs on it and help it move forward.
Yeah, great. Well, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that's really important that we mention?
You know, the only thing I can think about is that, you know, we're musicians and you're a musician too. And we listen to some of your music and you write some awesome stuff, man. I was like, that could be a whole other conversation talking about music and recording and whatever and whatnot. But yeah, I think besides that, you've I feel pretty good about things. What about you, Cliff?
Yeah. When you come to Austin next time, hit us up. We'll jam.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What do you guys play?
I play guitar. So does Carson.
Yeah,
you play drums and keyboard and all kinds of stuff.
Dude, yeah, I'm a bit of a jack of all trades, master of none. But Cliff, by all means, is a master of guitar. He's a big Van Halen fan. He can play Eruption note for note, no mistakes. I've heard him do it before. It's crazy.
Yeah, years ago, not anymore. Now I can only play 95% correct.
Right on. Do you guys get together and jam?
We haven't in a while, but we used to do singer-songwriter stuff every once in a while. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we should definitely do it again sometime.
Yeah, we should. We should.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that part. That actually, I was just interviewed the other week by someone who said that he wanted to interview me, but he didn't want to talk about all the regular stuff. He's like, you've done hundreds of podcasts for everybody wants to talk about and theogens and non-duality. So she's like, so what can we talk about? And I say, oh, that's super easy. No one ever asked me about art or photography or music or writing novels. So we could talk about any of that kind of stuff. And like, no one ever broaches those topics in interviews. And so we spent a lot of time talking about music, and that was a lot of fun for me. Well, thank you guys for reaching out and bringing Ikaros Connect. And it, for everybody listening, the website is ikaroconnect.com, and Ikaro is I-C-A-R-O. And of course, that's the traditional Amazonian ayahuasca song is the Ikaro, ikaroconnect.com. And so for anybody who's looking to open up a clinic or run a business or have some kind of legal retreat, this might be a resource that you want to use. And yeah, so thank you very much for bringing it to me, and for both of you being on the podcast today. I really appreciate your time and all that you've shared.
Thank you very much, Martin. It's been great.
Thank you.
It's been an honor to be on here.
All right.
Yeah, we'll do it again anytime.
Okay, excellent.